A second-generation Boone County, Indiana farmer, now driving Indiana's $35 billion ag economy forward. Don Lamb on farming technology.
So much is done now with GPS. So much is done now with variable rate technology, putting the right seed on the right, not just the right field, but the right soil type of that field.
On ag innovation.
You know, really, at the ag bioscience world and production agriculture is a lot like a basketball drill where you go down the court passing that ball back and forth between the two of you, and one of you is going to get the layup at the end.
And Don Lamb's vision for Indiana's global footprint in agriculture, especially in countries like Cuba.
Cuba's 90 miles off our coast with 11 million people that, to be honest with you, are really pretty hungry.
Yeah,
they do not have a lot of food in Cuba, and so they need a lot of things. And there's an opportunity there.
Get to know Indiana State Agriculture Department Director Don Lamb, the man leading the ninth largest farming state in the nation, on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Agriculture in Indiana is big business. There are some 94,000 Hoosier farmers in the state, helping to pump about $35 billion into the Indiana economy. Indiana, the number one producer of popcorn, gourds, and ducks, in the top five for corn and hog production, and second in the nation in growing pumpkins. Don Lamb knows all the ins and outs and ups and downs of farming. He and his family have been farming in Boone County for more than 60 years. And I am pleased to be joined on the podcast this week by Don Lamb, the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, a very busy guy. So, Don, really appreciate you taking the time to join me on the podcast.
No problem. I'm glad to be on. Always happy to talk about agriculture.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to talk about, certainly. And at this time of year, the last few weeks, hopefully, of winter, beginning to go away in the spring planting season on the horizon. As you look at 2024, and I know farmers are always a pretty optimistic group, I think, but what your outlook overall for Indiana agriculture?
Yeah. Well, we tend to go up and down a little bit. And I have been a farmer, you know, most of my life. I just started this job about a year ago. So most of the time I've been directly involved in production agriculture. And we've had two or three really good years here that we're coming off of. And so that's good. And that makes you feel good. But yeah, the year of 2024 looks much tougher. Commodity prices are down. Input costs are still high. And so 24 is a more challenging year to make a profit.
As you look at that, what are some of the dynamics that are really driving those situations with the input cost? I know, you know, globally, as you look at inflation and some of the other things that are out there from the 50,000 foot view, but what are really the dynamics driving that outlook for agriculture?
Well, it really is just what you said. It's almost as simple as that. The inflation has really taken off so much over the last couple of years. That's been fine as long as the commodity prices were doing the same thing. But like always happens in agriculture, there's this shift where commodity prices will drop a lot faster than what anything can catch up. And normally the input costs just don't come down anything, you know, maybe not at all, but definitely nothing like a commodity price does. And so you're kind of left in this seesaw that kind of leaves your stomach churning from an ag perspective. But it is as simple as that. Inflation's been big and commodity prices have been high, so it's been okay. And now commodity prices are down because of really a lot of different things. But we've produced a lot of good crops, and we've got world demand's a little different than it was, and prices just haven't gone down to reflect that.
Yeah, Don, as you look overall at Indiana agriculture, what are some of the other challenges? I know all industries face challenges with workforce, with getting skilled labor, that kind of thing. How big of an impact or how big of an issue is that for Indiana agriculture?
It is a big impact. You know, when you think about the industries, especially like a dairy or a poultry industry, where we can use a lot of labor, and you might have an H-2A program that's a seasonal labor issue, but those industries aren't seasonal. And so, you know, instead of bringing in seasonal labor to harvest watermelons in Knox County, like they do, they really, you know, those industries need people year round. So some of the programs just don't fit. And so yes, we need labor, and yes, it's hard to get it year round.
Talk about that again from a kind of a snapshot of Indiana agriculture. I think those who don't necessarily follow or connected to agriculture may not know the size and scope. And you mentioned dairy, and I think that's an interesting one because Indiana is a pretty strong dairy state, right?
It is. And it's kind of a surprising industry. You know, before I took this job, even as a farmer, I would have said the dairy industry was declining in Indiana. And partly because I'm from Boone County and we don't have hardly any dairies left in Boone County anymore. So you kind of see what's in your backyard. But since 2014, the number of farms in our state have been cut about in half. But the number of cows in our state is about the same. Hmm. And the production is actually up considerably. Yeah. Because the technology that's being used now, the robotic milking and things like that, we're producing more milk per cow. And so it's a surprisingly strong industry. It's really an exciting industry to be a part of in Indiana.
Yeah, you mentioned technology, and obviously that continues to be such an important part of the ag space. Talk about technology, and I know we're doing a big piece on the show this week on internet connectivity in Indiana and where that's at, and that's got to be a very important issue for farms in rural Indiana. But as you look at technology and innovation, how that's driving agriculture, how's that taking shape here in Indiana?
Well, it's taken shape in almost every sector of the farm economy, no doubt. And part of that is labor driven. Part of that's because, I talked about labor from a standpoint of maybe more immigrant type labor, but we also need labor that's highly skilled as well. And it's still somewhat hard to come by. So really, because that labor issue, technology has really taken off in so many different areas. But, you know, on our farm in Boone County, I'm a row crop farmer. But so much is done now with GPS, so much is done now with variable rate technology, putting the right seed on the right, not just the right field, but the right soil type of that field and things that change as you go across the field. And so the efficiencies that technology has allowed has been so great. And that's made it really an exciting time to be a part of agriculture.
Well, you talk about efficiency, probably no sector of the economy has maybe been more efficient over the years than farmers than agriculture. Mm-hmm. Talk about maybe even since you've been in how technology has impacted efficiency in what you do.
Well, when you think about things like our seed technology is really great, but it's also really expensive. So you're taking a very specific genetics of a seed and you're wanting to put it in the right spot, which is a great tool to have. But if you didn't have the technology to allow you to do that efficiently, you couldn't do it. And the other part of that is you think about a planter that may be 60 feet wide and every row is not exactly straight. So that planter is smart enough to know when to put seed down and when not to put seed down per row. Wow. And a sprayer that might have spray nozzles that are 20 inches apart from each other can shut individual nozzles off to make sure that there's no overlap. And a sprayer that's 120 feet wide is really working in 20 inch segments all the way across a spray boom. And so technology like that, when your inputs are expensive, the technology like that pays for itself pretty quickly across very many acres.
How about the global footprint of agriculture? I know that's very important. Exports of Indiana products. I know you were recently, back from a trip to Cuba, an ag trade mission to Cuba. Talk about that trip, really what the focus was and what you saw there.
Well, like you said, the global footprint for Indiana is really important for us to have those trade opportunities. And we've got so many places that we're going, we're really shipping a lot of products. Cuba is very different than that. Cuba is really in that very initial stages of what can we really do there? And of course, Cuba is 90 miles off our coast with 11 million people that, to be honest with you, are really pretty hungry.
Yeah,
they do not have a lot of food in Cuba, and so they need a lot of things. And there's an opportunity there. Of course, the government level makes it harder to deal with them, and a lot of the decisions that are made are really made at that federal level as far as how we're going to trade with them, what we're going to trade with them, and why we're going to trade with them, or maybe not trade so much with them. Yeah. So some of those decisions are out of our hands. But Cuba has made some changes. Really since 2021 in their constitution that has allowed the private sector to play a larger role in their economy. And in some ways, they're injecting some capitalism into their socialist economy. Hmm. And that's really what has gotten us more excited about being able to deal with Cuba. It may not be even on the government level as much as it is in that private sector level of a producer being able to purchase an input from the United States that would help them produce something in Cuba.
You mentioned before we started taping here your reaction to your visit, and I think you said something like it was exciting, but at the same time, I think you used the word depressing. I mean, it was kind of mixed emotions.
Well, it really is, because that was my first experience to be in a socialist country like that, and just to see that the people are really somewhat conditioned to live in that environment. You know, even if today they decided to turn over their country to a capitalist country, it would be really hard, because you'd have to change a lot of mindset, and you'd have people that are not used to thinking that way. So we would love to see a change there, but it's not going to happen quickly, and it probably wouldn't even be very healthy if it happened really quickly. And so the idea, when we visited a store where you take a ration book, you know, every person in that country takes the ration book. It doesn't matter what income level you're at. There are certain products that you only get from a government supplied store. And so, and you're assigned a certain store to go to get those rations. And we Americans don't, you know, we don't want to be told what to do. We don't want to be told what to drive. We don't want to, we're very independent. So the idea that the people there are very used to that system, where here's how you get your food and here's how it works, is just such a tough thing to see. And in general, the people are somewhat content where they're at and what's happening. But you also know that, you know, the ration right now for eggs is 5 eggs per person per month.
Wow.
So we think, you know, when you talk about being kind of discouraging, you know, when we think about the way we're able to live here and what we're able to do, and then what if we were limited to 5 eggs per month? It's a life changer, and they just live a different lifestyle than we're blessed to live right here.
Yeah. What's your feeling? Can Cuba be a market for American agriculture, and how could that potentially impact Indiana?
I think it definitely could be. I think there's a lot of potential there, and it's going to have to come again more from that federal level. There's going to have to be some changes made. And you know, again, kind of sadly, I would say right now their economy is failing. And so something's going to change. Something is going to have to change. Either the people will at some point revolt in some way, or there will be some change. And that's why that optimism of when they in 21, when they were willing to change their constitution to allow that private sector to play a bigger part of their economy, you know, that's a pretty optimistic move of, okay, there's some willingness to do something different because they need to. So what might be the next step, and what might be the step after that? It won't be quick, but there are opportunities in the future.
As you look at that broader global ag footprint for the state of Indiana, I know, I think it was the Indiana Soybean Alliance was recently in Indonesia, you know, looking at opportunities there. But you look at, you know, the ducks we export from here all over the globe, from Maple Leaf Farms up in northern Indiana, and so many examples you can point to. How important is global ag trade, and where do you see the kind of the political issues, global issues? How do you see that impacting that situation?
Well, it's really, really big. You're right. I'm proud of the fact that Indiana's in the top 5 in a lot of different things agriculturally. I'm a popcorn producer, and we're number one in popcorn. We out in Nebraska this year. We always compete against Nebraska to be number one. And so there's that friendly competition that goes on between states, and Indiana's really good at the export market. But the reason that it's so important is just because we produce well. Because of how much we can produce of these different products, we need those markets. We cannot use them all up domestically. So, you know, we need those foreign markets. And thankfully, there's people around the world that need the products, and it works out well that way. But as far as, you know, the things right now in the world economy are very interesting. The Russia-Ukraine war is really impacting the way we look at things. That's a huge breadbasket, really, that produced a lot of wheat, especially. So, what's that going to look like in the future? Who's going to control that market? There's things like that are really unknown. So we really kind of had the shift when that war started. It really affected the markets. Now I feel like we're kind of in a holding pattern. Okay, we kind of know what we've got for right now. What's the future look like? And we don't really know that yet.
Much more with Don Lamb, the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. When we return, we'll take a sneak peek at the future of agriculture and a lot more when the Business and Beyond podcast returns.
At PNC Bank, we're committed to making a difference in the lives of our customers and communities by helping them move forward financially. As a Main Street bank, we try to do right by our customers with every encounter. Our local teams offer personalized financial advice to help guide you in making the best decision. We're proud to be part of your community. PNC Bank. See how we can make a difference for you at pnc.com. Copyright 2022, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc., all rights reserved.
And welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is Don Lamb. Don is the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. And Don, you've been in your role as ISDA director coming up on exactly 1 year. So in that year, what have you learned? Has there been anything that surprised you? What are some of the big big focus areas you've been really concentrating on?
Well, I don't know if this would have surprised me, but one thing I've really learned is to really, really appreciate agriculture. And, you know, you'd think I've been a farmer my whole life, I would do that. But there's something about being able to step away from a farm and be able to look back at it, you know, from a 30,000 foot level. And my brother and his boys, and I've got a daughter that are still involved in that farm. So I'm connected to it daily, at least by a phone call. And the decisions that farmers make every day and the amount of work they go through and just the liability that they carry, if you're in the middle of it, you can't appreciate it well enough. But when you can step out of it and look back at what happens in Indiana agriculture, it just makes you really, really appreciate farmers. I've kind of heard that my whole life from, oh, I appreciate what you do. I appreciate you raising food and all that. And you kind of get it as a farmer, but you don't really understand it until you can see it from the outside. So that's been one big thing. And then the other thing I would say along those same lines, the people that I get to work with to daily now, when I think about the corn and soybean folks and the poultry folks and the pork folks and the Farm Bureau and just the ag community, you know, most of those people have an ag background, and it's not just a job. It's a love for the industry. And most of them will go way above and beyond to do their job well. So I just, you know, again, it shouldn't be a surprise, but the agriculture economy in Indiana is an incredible industry to be a part of.
Yeah. And I've always said, I look at farmers as kind of the ultimate entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, they're risk takers, they're innovators. They do all these things, you know, things out of their control. They can't control the weather. It's a challenging business, but as you, I think, said, and you live, it's one that people really have a passion for who are in it.
No doubt. And yeah, and for the most part, we're just really thankful to be in it, you know, as farmers too. We take a lot of liability. There's a lot of risk. But man, it's a good life, and it's a great way to raise a family, and been really, really fortunate to be a part of that.
How about the ag industry overall in the state of Indiana? A lot of focus on innovation and ag bioscience, and you've got Agrinovis Indiana, which is a group, of course, really spearheading a lot of that. As you look at the ag industry and the ability to get young people interested in agriculture as a career, I know part of the challenge, part of the opportunity, I guess you could say, is the fact that agriculture has so many different areas you can get into. Talk a little bit about that and the ability to recruit young people to get interested in the industry.
Well, first I'd say, you know, Mitch Frazier at Agrinovis is a really good friend. We meet regularly and I talk with him a lot. And we've used the story of, you know, really at the ag bioscience world and production agriculture is a lot like a basketball drill where you go down the court passing that ball back and forth between the two of you, and one of you is going to get the layup at the end, but you're a lot faster passing that ball than you are dribbling it yourself. Right. And we've really, you know, you kind of relate that whole idea of what the ag bioscience world does with production agriculture that way. Neither one of you could do it without the other. You know, the ag bioscience world needs production agriculture, and that's what they're producing products for. And we can be very efficient, like I was talking earlier, with our seeds and our technology because of that world of technology that's available to us. And so because of that, it's a really good synergistic environment. And so then when you think about bringing the pipeline of people in, you know, we've got two of our folks from ISDA today at Purdue at a job fair, and just lots of opportunities at every level, you know, whether it is a real science-based level, or they said that I've talked to them just a little bit ago, and they said some of the biggest interests they've had are the folks interested in soil conservation. So, you know, half of our people in the State Department of Agriculture are soil conservationists. That's a huge thing in our state. And so it's exciting to think we've got Purdue students, young folks, who are interested in conserving soil for the future.
As you look at the potential, the ag industry, beyond traditional production farmers into some of these other areas, and you look at the assets here, you know, the companies like Bex and others and Purdue University, obviously, mm-hmm. and so many multiple colleges, launching ag and ag-related programs. It seems there's a lot of momentum behind that, and the pieces are here for some really cool stuff from an economic impact. Is that an accurate assessment?
That is so accurate. We have got such a great environment here because of the resources we have available to us. When you think about Elanco Animal Health,
yeah.
the largest animal health company in the world, and we've got Corteva, largest U.S.-based ag company in the world, well, in the country, and a huge player in the world. And then you've got a Bex that's a family-owned business, but boy, it's not a small business. It's a very large family-owned business with some great resources available to it, and really everything in between. And when you combine that with the idea that even human health can be connected to a lot of things we're working on with animal health, and the synergy that's available between Purdue and IU and all the different ag companies we have here, we are uniquely positioned. And that's not just saying that. When you think about any other state and you try to put together those kind of resources in one spot, Indiana is unique.
What needs to happen to really light a fire? I think to an extent it's already been lit, I think, but really to get that going, what needs to happen here in Indiana to kind of go to that proverbial next level?
Well, so much of it. I mean, honestly, I appreciate doing things like this today because a lot of it is just communication. A lot of it is really recognizing that we've got these resources together and make sure that we are working together as a team. And when you think about, we talk a lot about Team Ag Indiana and the fact that we have a lot of different organizations and businesses that need to be communicating well. And so part of it is just recognition of that. And then part of it is the fact that there has been some foresight into some things like the campus where Elanco's headquarters is going is really a good example. There's more potential there for other businesses to join in that. And there's going to be synergy there. And of course, the Purdue and IU, we can call it a split if you want from the IUPUI campus, but there's a need for some Purdue resources here and there's a need for IU resources here. So how does that play maybe into that new campus? So there's just ways to be creative with what that future can look like.
How big of a plus is it to have the national FFA mm-hmm. office here too? Because that's, and obviously with their annual convention, bringing so many young people in, very impressive young people into Indianapolis over time. How big of a plus is that?
Well, it's big. And, personally, when I was at Lebanon High School in the mid 80s, there was no FFA program there, which is kind of interesting because after I left, there became an FFA program. Because FFA evolved to this place where it wasn't just farmers, it's everything to do with the ag bioscience economy and agriculture in general. And so I've watched that transition take place. And so for me to sit here on One North Capitol and look out and see, 70,000 blue jackets when they're here for that convention and hear nothing but positive comments, nothing but good things about the future of agriculture because of what those students represent. It's not just that they're in a really great industry, they're able to tell a story to the people who are in the non-farm world. And it's just it's a great opportunity for them to be right here.
How about the future of the family farm? You have a great perspective on that as you manage a family farm with other members of your family as well, grew up in that atmosphere. Describe for those who may not be totally familiar with family farming, what it's all about and how you see that, or do you see that changing?
Well, it probably is changing just because everything seems to change. But my dad was a first generation farmer and my brother and I both were able to join that operation with him. So it's kind of been a family passion as far as that goes. And then our children have had the opportunity to join in that. And that part probably won't change. Farms have gotten larger, so it makes things more complex. One little thing, we talked about technology earlier, and when my brother and I were young, we drove tractors at 12 years old and we did all sorts of things on the farm that people would look kind of sideways today at and say, boy, I can't believe you were able to do that. And that is one thing that has changed because of the technology, because of the size of the equipment and things like that, the young people aren't starting as young as we used to. So it has become more of a business decision to join this business in some ways than it was just a part of the family. The other thing, though, that's exciting, that's in that grain side of the, that's kind of gotten bigger over the years. But there is a whole new level, too, of smaller farms. Our Indiana Grown members are people that, you know, go to farmers markets and sell produce direct to retailers. And there's a lot of people raising meat that's being processed locally now. And we're really trying to get more of that done since COVID and since we kind of had a scare at where's our meat going to come from. And so there's kind of been a resurgence of that local effort in that way. And that's exciting because that's opened up a whole new layer of family farm businesses that can happen. It doesn't have to just be big agriculture the way that some people look at it. There's also small family farms that are able to grow and be a part of the economy.
Yeah, you talk about Indiana Grown. That's a good one I had forgotten about, but I think that's a very impactful program. And agritourism and not only smaller farms, but smaller communities, you know, really able to connect with something that can help their economy, their local economies. Talk about the Indiana Grown Initiative, how that's going, where you see that going.
Yeah, it's going great. Caroline Patrick leads that effort for us here at ISDA. And really, it's just a way that people can join it. You know, it's almost like joining a club. We're going to join this resource club that helps train them in some things they might need to know as a small business. We'll have a symposium coming up here in March where the people that are members come together and share ideas. So in a lot of ways, it just kind of shares that synergy and does some advertising for them. And it's really, like say, exciting to see. When I think about Indiana Grown, I kind of think quality of life. And I think of small communities. You know, we're on the same floor here in our office with OCRA. Mm-hmm. And so community office, community and rural affairs. And I think about small communities scattered across rural Indiana, you know, boy, if there's a good farmer's market in that community, it brings people to that community. It makes that community a place that people want to be a part of. And so Indiana Grown plays a piece of that. And then just kind of developing that whole quality of life for rural Indiana. It's kind of an exciting thing to see come together.
Is that, you know, kind of an untapped potential there to an extent? I think they've been tapping on it here for the last few years, but looking at that community development piece of Indiana Grown that could have impact here in Indiana statewide.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've had so much effort put into economic development. And when we think about economic development here in Indiana, we think about the business environment. We think about the way that we're able to attract these large businesses. But economic development really means that maybe a totally different thing to a small rural community, but it's just as important, if not more important, to those communities to be to have that really that momentum build up as a place to live. And so, yeah, it's an untapped thing. There's a lot of things for the future that could be done better and more of. And it's exciting to think about what rural Indiana, how that could change in the next 10 years.
Don, final question for you. As you begin here shortly, your second year as director at ISDA, big focus area for you. What's going to be the headline here for the next year at ISDA?
Well, for one thing, I'd kind of come back to where we started and say it's always about people. When we think about Cuba, you know, we're thinking about 11 million people that don't have enough food to eat. And so food security is something that everybody talks about. But that's a local issue, too. There's some really good efforts that go on here with Gleaners Food Bank and some things like that where agriculture is involved. So I see that being an effort in the next year where food security is national security. We hear that on that national level. But it's also an issue locally. And when we think about, I think, a 1% increase in food insecurity is a 12% increase in violent crime. So there's no reason that agriculture shouldn't be involved in working with that. So that'll be a part of the future. And then really anything we can do with economic development to bring agriculture along with all the positive changes that have happened economically in Indiana to not make agriculture a stumbling block to that, but make agriculture a piece of that development. And how do we really do that well for the agriculture economy and the general economy?
Don Lamb, a family farmer from Boone County, also very importantly, giving back to the state as director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Don, thanks so much for taking the time. Appreciate all you do, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. It's a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can download all of our episodes and get Indiana business news 24/7. All you have to do is go to insideindianabusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.